When you look at the roof of a building, what do you see? Many gardeners see a wasted opportunity. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we're going to start the hour off by talking about green roof technology. Green roofs can last longer than traditional roofs. They provide natural insulation that reduces energy costs. They can control stormwater runoff and improve air quality. We'll talk about developments in the green roof movement, what kind of a roof makes a good candidate to go green, and how they can be created and maintained. Jennifer Busolo is a lecturer and master gardener coordinator in the horticulture department at Iowa State University. She's also a green roof expert. And Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension will be here as well. We'll talk about green roofs and answer your questions. Please join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and in a few minutes, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will be joining us to answer your questions. But we're going to start this hour up on the roof. Jennifer Busolo is a lecturer in the horticulture department at Iowa State. She's also the coordinator of the Master Gardener Program, and she's an expert on green roof technology. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello.
Thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you, Charity.
Well, let's start with the basics. What defines a green roof?
Excellent. Well, the easiest definition is plants growing on a roof. And it's not as simple as the words are. Typically, there's a very sophisticated series of layers required to make sure that green roof is successful. But in general, it's basically growing plants on a roof.
What makes a roof a good candidate for growing plants on it?
Actually, most roofs can withstand the weight. That's the number one concern, is making sure that the roof can withstand the amount of weight that the green roof not only puts on it, but how much water that the soil can hold. That adds a lot of weight. So that's the first. Slope is another major issue. You want to make sure for most green roofs that they're less than 20% sloped, and anything really above 10 or 15% slope, you'll have to do some stabilization. But in general, most roofs can be greened.
It's something we're certainly seeing a lot more of in urban areas. Why do you think the movement has really grown in those areas?
Well, that's an excellent question. In fact, Chicago is a great example. Chicago has some major concerns, environmental concerns. They can't manage their storm water without some kind of help. They either have to dig up their storm water system and replace it with larger diameter pipes, or they can slow down the water that's getting to those pipes. And one way to do that is to, in essence, revegetate surfaces instead of creating these flat surfaces that water travels very rapidly to the stormwater system. Instead, the plants and the growing media slow that down.
Well, and that's something we see people in less urban areas managing through rain gardens on the ground.
Absolutely. And we have space in most parts of Iowa that we can manage water that way. But in very urban areas, they don't have that space.
What are some of the other problems that we can seek to solve through putting a green roof on a building?
Frequently, people use green roofs to reduce energy waste. There's a lot of energy that leaves through the top of buildings. And instead of that, this is adding another insulation layer. There's very few things besides soil that act so well as natural insulators.
Does it also have a cooling effect on the building, too?
It has a cooling effect in its nearby environment, mostly because the plants take up water and transpire that water, and it acts like an evaporative cooler. So it can help buffer major heat waves during the summer, but really the energy efficiency comes in the winter.
Okay. I have read about the movement to make more roofs lighter colored because it reflects light instead of absorbing light. Is that kind of heat absorption a real problem in cities?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I just finished some research at Colorado State University, and one of the components was looking at temperature differences between a typical roof and a green roof. And typical roofs get to 170, 190 degrees during the day in the summer. That's incredibly hot. So yes, you mentioned what we call high albedo or a light-colored roof. That's a really good way to reduce the temperature in that area. But green roofs can do something similar.
I can imagine people listening and thinking, you know, I would love to do that on my house. Is that a possibility on most houses? Could you make a green roof on a residence?
Absolutely. The biggest reason why we don't see more on houses is cost. Right now, because it's still relatively new in the U.S., and actually it's not new in other countries, but since it's a relatively new or revived technology, it's still the costs are relatively high. But we hope to, over time, bring those costs down.
So when you are looking at a roof, whether it's of a large building or a residence, and you decide, okay, this is strong enough to hold the weight, the slope will work for it. What do you do next? What's the next step in planning a green roof?
Well, green roofs actually last much longer than typical roofs. Most typical roofs last 20 years. A green roof lasts at least 2, if not 3 times longer. So what you really want to look at is making sure that membrane is acceptable. Whether you have shingles or a typical tar or EPDM membrane, as long as that membrane is relatively new and sound, that's your next step. And then you call contractors. So it's not that difficult.
Well, we'll talk about plant selection and the different kinds of green roofs in a moment. Carol from Carol has a question. Hello, Carol.
Hi, Jennifer. I have my sedum. I have a 22 by 44 foot slightly sloping commercial roof, second story. What I need is a closer source than Minneapolis for the liner that goes on top of the roof.
So the membrane?
Well, yeah. See, I thought the membrane was my roof. I had it all double checked, and it's got that rubbery foam coating.
Ah, well, most roofing companies should have a similar material, unless your specs line out one particular brand. Is that the case?
No, it's just that the liner I thought was almost like a very fine net that held the soilless material that the sedum goes in.
Oh, you're talking about a special product. Yeah, you know, there probably wouldn't be any closer distributors than Minneapolis. I know exactly what you mean. It goes on the soil surface?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, there's not going to be one any closer. As green roofs gain popularity in Iowa, maybe we can get more, but for now, it's just Minneapolis.
Okay.
Well, good luck, Carol. Hey, Carol,
yeah, enjoy.
Wait just a second. Why did you decide to put a green roof on your building?
Because I have been reading about them for 4 years, and I want to be the first one in town.
All right.
Good for you.
Thank you so much for your call, Carol.
It's just sedum. I mean, there's nothing, no prairie flowers or anything else, just sedum.
That's great. Those are the most ideal plants for green roofs, so good for you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Carol. And Jennifer, let's talk about the different kinds of plants you can put on a green roof. How do you decide what kind of vegetation to put on the roof once you've decided that you're going to do it, once you've made sure that you've got the soil and everything that you need?
Well, the first question always for me is, how deep is your soil profile? Do you have 2 inches of substrate, or do you have 8 inches of substrate? That determines entirely your plant palette. Now, most green roofs, at least the ones that I've worked with and studied for years, are about 4 inches of soil, or soilless media, really. Very rarely is there actual soil involved because it's a little too heavy. So we have very specialized blends. So at the 4-inch depth, typically it's sedum species, as Carol mentioned, that do the best. They're very shallow rooted. Most of them are evergreen in nature. These aren't the sedums that you find necessarily in your yard, not the autumn joy. That's a different species than we typically use on green roofs. But they grow more like turf. They grow as a carpet almost. So they're ground covers.
How much maintenance would you need to do on a roof like that?
Well, there is maintenance, and that's something that usually gets ignored. It would be about every 2 weeks you need to check for, especially as it's getting established, check for weeds. Weeds are one of the biggest issues, at least in Iowa, and make sure it doesn't go more than about 3 weeks without rain.
So you'd actually need to put a sprinkler up on your roof.
I recommend it as a safeguard, but it can be as simple as an overhead oscillating sprinkler.
What about some of the other kinds of vegetation? If you have more of a substrate, if you have 4 inches or 8 inches, what other kinds of options do you have?
Well, really, the sky's the limit there. You can select any species that your heart desires, because most of them can handle, 8 to 12 inches of media. The difference is they'll tend to be shorter than they would on the ground, because they have less root zone to get their roots established. They have less top growth. There is one exception, though. Plants that are very tap-rooted tend to not do as well on green roofs, mostly because they have an adaptation to drought conditions using that taproot to access deep supplies of stable moisture. On a green roof, we don't have that. So just keep that in mind. If they're more fibrous-rooted plants, they'll do very well on green roofs.
Now, of course, rooftop gardening is getting to be more and more popular in urban areas as well. Can you use a green roof to also have a rooftop garden?
Oh, absolutely. So the difference there, you're talking about a rooftop garden is what we call an intensive green roof. That's a deep green roof. And basically, that's the same kind of garden that you would have at grade, with very few exceptions. It's the very shallow, lightweight systems that appear quite different, and those are called extensive green roofs.
Well, it sounds like there are as many kinds of green roofs as there are gardens.
Yeah, exactly.
So if somebody is looking for information about green roofs, if it's something that they are looking into, if they have a commercial building or if they want to do it on their house, where would they start?
Well, that's really up to them. They can start with companies. We have companies all over the U.S. that have representatives, including here in Iowa. So if they have a particular company they want to start with, I can help them if they want to contact me. I've had several folks since I've gotten here, including Iowa State University, ask for where to start with green roofs. So I can certainly help them.
Is there a green roof on campus now?
There's actually two, with two more in the works.
Oh,
so,
great.
Yeah.
Jennifer Busolo is a lecturer in the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University and also a green roof expert. We'll talk more about green roofs and all of the kinds of plants that you have questions about in a moment. Join us at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa.
Up on a roof. When this old world starts getting me down, and people are just too much for me to face,
up on the roof.
I climb way up to the top of the stairs. And all...
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and it is Horticulture Day today. We've been talking about green roofs, but now you're welcome to call with questions about anything you'd like to grow or grow better. Richard Giron is here. He is with Iowa State University Extension, and of course, Jennifer Busolo is still with us. She's a lecturer in the Hort Department at Iowa State. She's also the coordinator of the Master Gardener Program. You're welcome to call us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Ralph is on the line from Poweshiek County with a question for you, Jennifer. Hello, Ralph.
Let's see, at a breezeway, it's not a very steep pitch, like a 312 pitch. And it was a metal roof, and you put your membrane on. You could probably actually, if I'm not wrong, have radishes or something growing up there amongst whatever else you wanted to plant earlier in the year, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, there's all kinds of green roofs now that are growing food. So you most certainly can.
Couldn't you plant cucumbers up there and let them drape, kind of grow down the side of the breezeway, and then you'd have just all kinds of food.
That would be fantastic. The one thing I'd be concerned about with the cucumbers is they have very long vines, and they require a lot of support, but the green roof tends to not be able to have deep enough soil to get the right volume for those roots. So I'd worry about them pulling out over time.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Ralph.
Yes, great idea.
So Ralph's question is interesting, though, because if you put a green roof on a breezeway, that would be a great way to maximize gardening space, but you wouldn't get a lot of the other benefits of a green roof, right?
Well, if you want to make sure your breezeway stays a little bit warmer in the winter and a little cooler in the summer, that would help. As far as really getting the maximum benefit for stormwater, no, it probably wouldn't do that.
Okay, although it may help.
Right.
Linda's on the line in Waverly. Hello, Linda.
Yes, hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I was wondering if I have a brand new house, and if I wanted to just climb up there and put a frame around it and maybe a plastic liner on my brand new asphalt, couldn't I just grow stuff that way? You know, put up some, I don't know, 2x12s or 2x8s, and I don't know if you need a plastic liner on top of that new shingles.
A great question. Actually, you do need to put a plastic liner over shingles because shingles only shed water, but if water's sitting on them for very long, it gets up, works its way up under. So that's a question because I'm not necessarily a roofer, but I've asked roofers about that multiple times. That's a great question. So you would have to seal it, and it would still... you would have to, if you have a typical pitch, you would still have to do regular stabilization. And the one concern I have regarding wood, because I've built green roofs that we've used wood as edging, is over time it will rot. So even if it is treated, these are designed to last for 60 years, and we'd like them to. So I'd be nervous about that. In fact, that's the number one limitation, is getting the right edging. So
that's why you need to hire someone.
Typically, yes. Okay. Plus, they do something very nice. They provide a guarantee for their product. So if you do have something happen to your, you know, very valuable home, then they cover it.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, I don't know if anybody there is there today that could tell me what side of a house to plant blueberry bushes, north or...
Richard can certainly answer that question. Richard?
Well, as far as the blueberries, they need at least 6 hours of direct sun. So any site that receives at least 6 hours of direct sun, there are two other very important things. They require a well-drained soil. They do not like wet, poorly drained sites. They also require an acid soil, so you have to amend the soil. You have to lower the pH. And a very good way to do that is, as you plant the blueberries, to mix in some Canadian sphagnum peat or sphagnum peat. That's very acidic. And so when you backfill, it should be about 50% soil and 50% peat.
Okay, so on this new construction that I have, if I put them on the north side along the edge of the house, kind of like shrubbery, and amended the soil, that it wouldn't be too cold in the winter for them or anything?
No, if you choose...
There's no trees anywhere on my yard,
okay.
So I have sunlight everywhere.
If they're far enough away from the house where they get plenty of sun, being on the north side, they should do fine. Make sure you choose hardy varieties. There are quite a few that are, and so the cold should not be an issue if you choose hardy varieties.
And so what you said about the sun, if it's up against the house, would the south side maybe be better for that?
Well,
if
they're far enough away on the north side, they should be fine, because in the summertime, the sun is nearly overhead, so there's not much of a shadow cast during the late spring and summer. So if it's far enough away, just a few feet away, it probably should be okay.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Linda. And next up at 866-780-9100, we have Dawn in Ames. Hello, Dawn. Hi, Dawn. Maybe Dawn can't hear us. One more try. Dawn, are you there? I guess we've lost Don. Jeremiah is on the line in Maquoketa. Hello, Jeremiah.
Hello, this is John.
Oh, okay. Hello, John.
Yes, good morning. I'm putting my roses away for the winter. How far back should I cut them?
We normally don't prune them actually in the fall. If you have something like hybrid teas or floribunda roses, if the canes are fairly tall, what you can do is maybe loosely tie them together with some twine, and we typically suggest to take some soil from the garden and basically cover the bottom 8 to 12 inches of the rose canes and just leave it like that. And typically what happens is the areas that are exposed will typically winter kill, and they'll turn brown. And in the spring, we'll remove the soil and then cut out the dead wood. So that's normally what we do. The only time that we would typically prune them back in the fall is if we intend to use the rose cones, those styrofoam-type structures that we put over the actual roses. And we typically don't recommend those. We think soil does a better job.
And then in the spring, how soon do I uncover them?
Typically around early April. Obviously, it depends from year to year, but usually early April when the weather starts to moderate. And they can still survive a light frost or freeze, no problem. So if it does snow after that, or if it does get below freezing, let's say in the upper 20s, that's not a problem. So typically early April.
And one last question. Should I soak the bed thoroughly with water before putting into bed?
Well, it has been fairly dry recently, so it might be a good idea to go out there and water them a little bit. Most plants that are established should be okay, but roses are kind of finicky, so maybe giving them some water before fall would be fine.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, John. If you'd like to join our conversation, 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It is Horticulture Day today, and I'm here with Richard Giron and Jennifer Busolo. And we did get an email from Caitlin in Iowa City, again on the green roof topic. She says, are there any city ordinances or rules that apply to establishing a green roof on a home? I have a friend whose neighborhood doesn't allow them on their homes. Apparently, only three roofing materials are approved for use in their subdivision, and wondered if that's a common obstacle to putting them on residential homes.
You know, that's a great question, and unfortunately, it really depends on location. So if you have HOA or other groups that govern your area, yes, maybe that does dissuade green roofs. But in general, no, we don't run across them. In fact, it's more the other direction. Cities like Toronto have now required any flat roof above 500 meters squared has to be greened. So it's usually more the other direction. Even Chicago has started to do residential applications where they give small grants to encourage it. So usually we don't run across that. Now, there might be ordinances in place that you can apply for an exception. So that's usually what I hear more often.
Okay, so check is the moral of the story. Florence is on the line from Ames. Hello, Florence.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Good morning, everyone. My question was, last winter, some bushes in my yard were badly eaten by rabbits and deer. Mm-hmm. And so they are very uneven. It's a burning bush and huge. And I was wondering, is it a good time now to cut them back?
No, I would wait on those until next year. With the burning bush or euonymus, I'd probably do that sometime around March, early April, before it begins to leaf out. And you can prune those back fairly severely if you need to. As far as the yews, I'd probably do that around early to mid-April. And the yews are something that comes back pretty well, too. So both of those have the ability to come back and be nice plants.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Florence. And next up, we have Matthew in Boone. Hello, Matthew.
Hi there. I was calling today about building some raised beds for some garden for next spring. And I was wondering, I have some peat moss that I picked up, and you guys just mentioned something about the blueberries and the acidity of the soil. I was actually looking for something to kind of thin out the soil because I got some pretty hard pan in my yard, and that's one of the reasons why I went with the raised beds. Is there some amendments that you would recommend adding to a raised bed in Iowa just to raise just normal things like tomatoes, peppers, things like that?
Yeah, as far as a soil mix, there are various combinations, but I think a good one would be basically one-third good garden soil, topsoil, one-third organic matter, and the organic matter can be compost, peat moss, whatever, and maybe one-third coarse sand or perlite. So that would be kind of a nice mix, about a third of each.
Okay. Yeah, the beds that I was thinking of making are about, they're going to be about 10 inches above the ground. How far down would you guys recommend digging into the soil that's below the beds, say with a tiller or something like that?
I'd probably go down maybe 6 or 8 inches. And then I would mix my material, maybe on the driveway or someplace, and maybe add an inch or two and then kind of work that in, and then add some more and work that in and just kind of fill it up.
Oh, very good.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Matthew. The number to call with your questions is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Rob is on the line from Cascade. And, Rob, it sounds like you're already dreaming of spring.
Yes, I am. I guess I'm a first home buyer. I just bought a house, and we're getting ready to put a garden in the spring. I'm pretty new to this. I was just curious, what could I do this fall to get it prepared so I'm ready for planting come the spring?
When you say a garden, you mean a vegetable garden, flower garden?
Vegetable garden.
Okay. The first thing I would do would be to go out and till the area. And as you till it, if you notice the soil seems to be quite hard, maybe a lot of clay in it. What you might want to do then at that point is look for a source of organic matter. Again, it could be compost or peat. If it's a big garden, I'd look for compost. Maybe the city or some other location has a composting facility. Maybe you can get the compost from them. And basically bring in some compost, maybe apply a couple inches, work that into the existing soil, and then plant next spring. And then if you still think the soil still does not work very, very well, then maybe add a little bit more next fall. You could also do a soil test if you want to do that, and that would check that would determine your soil pH, your phosphate levels, and your potash levels, and see if that's a problem or not. So you could do that. So those would be two things that I would be thinking about doing.
Okay. Do I want to look at stripping the grass off the top of the dirt then before I till, or should I just till that in?
Absolutely. You want to get rid of the existing vegetation. You could actually get a sod cutter if it's grass and cut the sod, remove it, and put it elsewhere if you can use it. It may be a little bit too late to apply Roundup at this point because the grass probably is no longer actively growing. It may not absorb the Roundup very well, so that may not work very well. But you do want to get rid of the existing grass first. So maybe a sod cutter or something like that.
Why is that so important, Richard? Because I know that in some gardens people plant ground covers so they can till those plants into the soil for extra nutrients. Why would you want to get rid of the grass?
Because, one, it's kind of hard to till with that grass in place. If it's a really good stand of grass, it forms a pretty tough layer of sod, which is hard to break. And so typically you want to get rid of it either by killing it or removing it. And then once you've done that, then it should be fairly easy to till.
Okay. Well, Rob, thank you very much for your call. And the seed catalog should start to show up, what, in January?
No, they typically arrive in December.
Oh, okay.
They're
so
getting
you can
a little bit earlier
every
year.
Start dreaming early, even before the holidays.
Even before Christmas.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And we've got time for one more before our break. We'll get to the others in a little while. Martha's on the line from Fairfield. Hello, Martha.
Hello. Yes, I have a red maple tree. It's about 5 years old. And the branches are not developing. The trunk is actually getting bigger, fatter, but the branches are not developing. I'm thinking that it might be root-bound in some way, and if that's true, what can I do about it?
I'm not sure that's the case. How long has a tree been in the ground?
At least 5 years. I think it's been about 5 years.
Okay. Sometimes when you plant a tree, it takes them a few years to get established, and during that time, they may not grow like you want them to, but my guess is they'll be okay on their own. As far as the tree is concerned, if they were planted too deeply, obviously that could be a problem. There's really no good way to correct that, though. So I guess I would be just inclined just to do nothing. Maybe give it a little bit of fertilizer next spring. That might be okay, where you go out with a all-purpose garden fertilizer, like a 10-10-10, and maybe just sprinkle a small amount of that around the tree in the spring, like in April, and see if that does any good. But I'm guessing initially it was just a case of the tree getting established, developing a good root system, and once it's established, then it's going to branch out nicely. That's my guess.
All right, Martha, thank you so much for your call. You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. My guests are Richard Geron and Jennifer Busolo from Iowa State University.
A singer, green, green is green, they say, on the far side of the hill. Green, green, I'm going away to where the grass is greener still.
Now there ain't nobody in this whole wide world gonna tell me how to spend my time. I'm just a good loving rambling man. Say, buddy, can you spare me a dime? Hear me crying, it's a
green.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and it is Horticulture Day today. With me are Richard Geron from Iowa State University Extension and Jennifer Busolo. She's a lecturer in the Horticulture Department at Iowa State University and also the coordinator of the Master Gardening Program there. And Mary in Marengo has given us a call at 866-780-9100. You can call us as well. Mary, thank you for your patience. What's your question?
My question is regarding blue spruce trees growing near right beside a road in a cemetery, and they're crowding the road to the point that people are, the road is migrating, and I want to know if we can trim off the bottom. The trees are about 20 years old, probably. Can we trim off enough that trees or that cars can pass safely by without brushing against the branches and not kill the trees?
Well, for example, you could remove the bottom limbs on those trees, and that will not kill the tree. So that's possible, where you actually cut the branches back to the trunk.
Right.
And that will not kill the tree. So you can do that. I guess if I was going to do that, I might do that in the spring early.
Okay.
The key is you cannot just cut off the ends of the branch. If you do, that branch is not going to do anything again. So if you really need to prune them back quite a bit, the whole branch is going to have to come off.
Okay. And if, like, how high up could we go on a 20-year-old tree? Is 6-7 feet acceptable? I know it's not going to look as good, but, I mean, as far as the health of the tree.
I would say maybe a third of the way up. Possibly at most. Possibly at most. Where you still have two-thirds on top and one-third below. So beyond that, that's going to cause quite a bit of stress. If you go beyond that, let's say you go halfway up, that's going to be quite stressful. And so I would keep that maybe a third and two-thirds on top.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
Thanks a lot for your call, Mary. And next up, we have Trudy in Iowa City. Hello, Trudy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have four rose plants. Three of them we purchased 2 years ago, and it was probably about this time of year for an extremely low price at a hardware store. They were like a dollar each, and I really didn't know what they would do. We planted them, and they're growing crazy, but they're climbing roses, these three are. And I want to know if it's too late to move them to a fence because they're kind of taken over in a bad spot in the yard. Can I still move those?
Boy, I would definitely wait and do that early next spring if you could.
Okay.
The concern would be if you did it now, they may not survive the winter very well. Because when you dig up anything and transplant it, you do damage the plant. And if you do that in the fall, the plant may not be as winter hardy. So that can be an issue. So I would prefer to do that early in the spring. And I guess the first thing I would do would be probably go out there in early April, as soon as the ground kind of thaws out and kind of firms up, but before the plant begins to leaf out, and take some twine and maybe kind of tie it to the base of one cane and then kind of wrap that around the plant so it's going to be easier to work around. And then dig it up and replant it immediately and keep it well watered. And if you have some really, really big canes that are really tall.
Oh, they're about 6-7 feet tall right now, but they're all leaning in different directions, of course.
Okay. I was thinking maybe actually pruning out some of those bigger ones so there's less volume to move. So you might you might consider removing a few of the biggest ones near the ground, taking the rest of the canes, tying them together, and then digging up the plant and transplanting it.
In April.
Yep.
So don't cut it now. Cut in April.
I would do that early in the spring. That would be the best time to do it. My concern is if you do it this fall, it may not survive the winter.
Okay. And then I have this one other rose that came in a bouquet from a friend as a gift. And it kept staying so healthy in just a bottle, a vase of water. And I finally just stuck it in the dirt in a pot. And it is blooming, and I wondered where, I don't even know what kind it is. I know it's for bouquets. It was a straight, white, big blossomed rose, but what should I do with that since it's still in the pot and I never put it in the ground? Can you bring it in, or what do I do with that one?
I think what I would do is dig a hole in the ground outside in a somewhat protected location, maybe near the house, and set the pot in the ground. And how big is the plant itself above the pot?
About 4 feet tall. It was amazing.
About four
it just
feet
kept
tall.
Growing. And yeah, about four
okay.
feet.
Well, so I would set it in the ground and then actually cover the bottom foot or so of the cane with soil. So make a nice mound around the plant, cover the bottom foot or so of the actual cane, and then cross your fingers.
Oh.
because most of your modern roses are budded or grafted, and they're budded or grafted onto a hardy rootstock. And this plant doesn't have that, so I'm kind of worried that it may not survive the winter. But that's what I would do, is cover the bottom. In fact, what you could do is maybe put some chicken wire fencing or hardware cloth around it, cover the bottom foot with soil, and then maybe another foot with maybe some straw, pine needles, or leaves.
I have plenty of pine needles.
Okay.
Plenty. Yeah.
And then take that off in the spring and see what it looks like. You'll know because any dead cane material is going to be brown in color, and live tissue is going to be green. So you'll know as soon as you take it off if it survived or not. So
okay.
And then if it did survive, you can just cut out the dead, dig up the plant, and pot it or plant it somewhere outside.
Okay.
You must be very talented with roses.
I don't know why things root here. They take root all over the place. So
well, that's wonderful.
Yeah. I'll let you know next year what happens to it.
All right. Thanks a lot. So in Master Gardening training, Jennifer, where do you teach the cross your fingers?
I think that just comes intuitively with gardeners.
All right. Lisa's on the line in Des Moines. Hello, Lisa.
Hi. Well, I have another question about moving plants. Is it too late to move some upright yews? They're about 5 feet tall. We do have access to some heavy equipment that could get a decent size, root, part of the root. I don't know if they're how deep the roots are and things like that. So.
Yeah, I would say it's too late. As far as evergreens, you typically want to move those like in late summer, maybe early to mid-September, so they have a chance to develop some new roots before winter. Now in November, it's really too late. I would say, again, probably early to mid-April of next spring would be a great time to do it.
Okay.
Do you have a tree spade in your family, Lisa?
No, we just have access to a friend that has a little tractor with an end loader, front-end loader, and we thought we could scoop them out that way.
Well, that might be handy, but I would probably dig them up by hand using a spade and maybe...
And these are 5 feet tall?
Yeah. How deep-rooted are they?
Well, actually, they're not that deep.
Okay.
So what I would do is go out and dig a trench around the plant next spring with my shovel or a spade and go down about, 2 feet down and then kind of round off the bottom, kind of dig underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll probably need some help as far as it may be a 2 or 3 person job. You could lay maybe some burlap in one side of the trench and then kind of maybe work the soil ball onto that.
Mm-hmm.
And then wrap it around it and then move it that way.
Okay.
How many of these do you have, Lisa?
Oh, about 4.
So maybe...
That sounds like fun.
A weekend job.
Yeah, and then some.
Right.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Bill is on the line from Sac City. Hello, Bill.
Oh, good. Well, thank you for taking my call. And Richard, you made your comment earlier with regard to putting roses to bed for the winter. That was to put dirt around the base of the bush.
Mm-hmm.
Would oak leaves work as well as dirt? And the reason I asked that is it'd be so much easier for me just to blow all the leaves away in the spring as opposed to, having dirt there.
The leaves wouldn't be as effective. They tend to kind of mat down when they get wet. So what looks to be very impressive in the fall, by spring, they may have matted down with the rain and the ice and the snow. So oftentimes they're not as effective. They do provide some protection, but typically not as much as soil would provide. So,
good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Bill. The easy answer never seems to be the the right one, does it? Next, we've got Larry on the line in Waterloo. Hello, Larry.
Hello.
What's your question?
Well, I planted some dill in my garden this last year, one of my raised beds. And now I have dill everywhere. I have it in the yard, the lawn, all over my garden spot. And I'm just wondering what I can do to get rid of that or get it under control or whatever.
Well, in the lawn, it's not going to survive being mowed off. So eventually it's just going to die out. In the garden, you're probably just going to have to pull out the little seedlings that you don't want. It does go to seed very freely, but it's something that does pull out fairly easily if you don't want it. So probably just hand pulling and cultivating in the yard. Don't worry about it. It really won't survive long term.
Okay. And weed killer, spraying weed killer or something like that on it, will that?
Oh, you could. I mean, if you could spray it with Roundup if you wanted to kill everything. But in a lawn situation, I really don't see that being a problem. In a garden situation, just cultivate and pull.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
That's one of those rough ones that you have to remove the seed head or you live with forever.
So next year you know.
You'll have some free plants next year, probably much more than you need, but like I said, they do pull out fairly easily. They're small little seedlings, yeah.
All right, good luck with that, Larry. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got James in Des Moines. Hello, James.
Good morning. I have an additional question what I asked. I had a lot of truck traffic on my front lawn during the construction. How can I decompress the soil?
Well, the best thing to do would be to go out maybe next spring. It's a little bit too late for this year. Go out early next spring, like around mid to late April, and either have a lawn care company or yourself do it, but get a core aerator. It's a machine that pulls out, plugs the soil. And do that around mid to late April and run over the yard 2 or 3 times in different direction. And that's going to pull out plugs of soil. And you'd like to pull out plugs that are maybe 2 or 3 inches in length. So as deep as you can, but pull out plugs of soil. And that's going to help as far as water penetration and things like that. So that would be very beneficial. And you might do it again, possibly again in September. So maybe mid to late April, maybe around mid-September.
then I need to plant some grass in the construction area because I tore that up pretty good. And what I did was I tilled, but I tilled too deep and brought up a bunch of clay. So is it too late to till again and put some grass seed down, or
well,
is that a waste of time?
You could still till, but it's too late to sow grass seed at this point. The best time to sow grass seed is basically late August, early to mid-September. So at this point, it's too late. As far as sowing grass seed, about mid-April of next spring.
Okay. Then I know I'm going to trim my oak tree in March, but what about the Scotch pine?
Well, as far as the Scotch pine, you could prune that March or early April. Now, as far as the oak trees, the ideal time would be December, January, and February, possibly okay. Early March. But you want to do it before bud break, definitely, on the oak trees.
All right. Thank you for the show.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, James. And next up, we've got John in Grinnell. Hello, John.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Oh, I got a two-year-old peach tree in my front yard that was destroyed by the wind last week. I drove home, and it was laying flat on the ground. It had broken off almost completely right at ground level, which just amazed me. The tree had already dropped all of its leaves, or 95% of them. My question is there any chance that root ball will send up a new tree shoot in the spring, or is it a goner?
It could, but the problem is it's probably coming from the rootstock. It probably broke off at the graft union, and if it came up from the roots, that would be from the rootstock, and that may not produce good quality fruit. So if you really want to grow a peach tree, you're probably going to have to buy another one next spring and plant that.
Yep. So. Okay, well, then that is what I'll do. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, John. And we have one final question. This is from Twitter, and this is from Lindsay, who lives in an apartment building, and she was listening to the green roof conversation. She says, is there any way to make a temporary green roof after getting a landlord okay?
Actually, there is. There are a few kits available on the market that are, and I'm not recalling the trade names at the moment, but if you just simply Google green roof kit, you can choose from 4-inch deep to 8-inch deep systems, and they're usually about 2 foot wide and 4 foot long, and it comes with the correct growing media and everything. All you have to do is buy the seed and water it. So there are some of those, and you can even piece those together if you'd like. So there certainly are.
And what kind of benefit would you get out of a small scale green roof that's temporary?
Well, most of the ones that I see like that are for growing vegetables. That way people can use a system that's relatively lightweight instead of lugging around a lot of heavy pots. So that's typically, or if they want to have a few cut flowers for their house, that's another benefit.
All right. Well, Jennifer and Richard, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. You're welcome.
And we'll talk to you again next week, Richard, when it's Hort Day again. Richard Duran is a horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension. Jennifer Busolo is a lecturer in the horticulture department at Iowa State University. She's also the coordinator of the Master Gardening Program, and she talked with us today primarily about green roofs. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Technical support today in Ames from Russell Mansky. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. And, of course, you can send us email anytime. We'd love to hear your comments, your questions, suggestions for things you'd like to hear in the future. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up on Monday on Talk of Iowa, a conversation with NPR research librarian Kee Molesky. Her new book is All Facts Considered. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Have a great weekend.